Kamenetsky Brothers, Land of Lakers podcast. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. Lots of cover today, Andy. It's been kind of busy. Got some new guys on the team. Some guys people want on the team. Some big ACK questions. Some of the most significant ACK questions we've ever had. Major happenings up in Portland. Depressing. A very depressing end to an era.
They make you realize, Brian, just how lucky you are to be a Laker fan who can afford to watch a game at Staples Center.
We'll explain that coming up in a bit.
If you're not one of those people, by the way, you're just unlucky.
Actually, you're just normal. Really, you're just normal. You're just like the rest of us.
And we ain't lucky.
We're starting today, obviously, on some sad news, and not a whole lot that's funny about this. The Lamar Odom situation continues really to get worse. Without Andy, delving into the specific reports, which TMZ says this, People says that, whatever. Maybe he went to rehab. The LA Times says he didn't. He's, maybe getting help. Maybe he's not. The point is,
maybe using crack, maybe using cocaine, maybe using all oxy. Maybe he's been using it for multiple years.
Point is, it's bad.
Right.
And whatever the exact details are with Lamar, it's a very sad story.
There have been enough people commenting publicly, like his peers, players, Magic Johnson, Phil Jackson, expressing concern for Lamar, that
something is very obviously up, and it's very big and it's very bad. And we have talked a lot on our show and on others. We, like everybody else, are huge fans of the person, and it's sad to see somebody who has managed to come through so much tragedy. I think people are starting, as they read more about him, to get a feel for that.
I think
this is not something that started with a guy who had a bad trade from the Lakers and then a really bad summer after that.
No, I've said many times, and the timeline from one of the only consistencies I think we've seen from conflicting reports is that the timeline from this, I think, really began after that offseason leading into the lockout, where Lamar's cousin was killed, and then either heading to the funeral or coming back, he was in a car.
He was on the way to the funeral.
On the way to the funeral, was in a car that was involved with an accident with a bicyclist.
The car hit a motorcycle. The motorcycle hit the kid.
Right.
The kid died.
Lamar was not driving, but there has been so much death in Lamar's life and over the course of such a long time. And I've talked about this with him before. It really wears him down. And I refuse to believe that was not really the tipping point to when all of this began. Offseason is what really put, I think, a lot of what Lamar had been able, I don't want to say to get over, because some of this stuff, you don't get past the death of your son. That is not something you get past. It's something you learn how to live with and learn how to cope with. But I think it's stuff that Lamar had been able to deal with. And then this kind of just sent those emotions into overdrive.
It's just you reach a point, and this is where this stuff about he just freaked out after the trade bothers me, because it's not always. When in that list of things that you name, Andy, and Lamar said a bunch of times, he was the one guy in the league who didn't want basketball that year. He was in no shape, physically and mentally, to play. But and he was, I'm not excusing how he played with Dallas and all that kind of stuff. He showed up and he cashed their checks, and he should have done better. But it doesn't have to be the biggest thing that takes a guy and pushes him over the edge, wherever that edge may be. It's all the other stuff that can get you there. And sometimes it's the small thing. Sometimes it's just one more thing that you just can't handle it. And for a guy like Lamar, who has spent so much time coping and so much of his energy being a great teammate and being somebody who is in the locker room supporting everybody and all those things. And Dave McMenamin at ESPN LA wrote a great article where former teammates, guys like Shannon Brown, were talking about how Lamar didn't like talking about himself and his problems or whatever, didn't like opening up about that kind of stuff. He was always focused on what you were doing. And it's the type of thing that when you do get pushed past it, and when you do reach that point where you can't cope, that fall, that ability to stop yourself and keep all these things from snowballing, I think it'd be very difficult. And you know, I don't care how much money Lamar has at his disposal, how much of the means he has, and the support system, you know, all these people that care about him, he's dealing. He has a lot of shit going on, yeah. And you can be and ought to be sympathetic to the person, even if you don't condone, obviously, the drug use and the rumors of cheating on his wife and all these other things.
And it's so awful to see this play out in this tabloid culture that, when Lamar got involved with Khloe Kardashian and eventually married her, you knew that this would be a part of his life in some way, and it has been. But it's largely been either, I think, positive in the sense that the first few years they were together.
First couple of years, it actually worked out. We were waiting because we were at that training camp, Andy went, and that after that summer when we were all like, what did Lamar do over the summer? He married Khloe Kardashian.
They've known each other for 6 weeks or something.
I think it was less than that. I think it was like 30 days or something ridiculous. And we expected something horrible to happen within like 2 months. And initially she was really good for him. I mean, I've talked to a few people. I know some people who work on the show and I know some people around. And she was really good for him initially and really still isn't the problem. But the publicity
thing you would see in these tabloids was Lamar and Khloe can't get pregnant. They're having difficulty conceiving a child. And, it's stuff that you don't even know if it's true or not. Every single star in Hollywood apparently can't get pregnant, for years and years and years till all of a sudden they suddenly do. But now we're seeing this play out in this very ugly tabloid way, TMZ following Lamar when he's going to Taco Bell. Just, at this point, I mean, the guy is so frazzled and so fragile and at the edge. I'm not saying you would expect TMZ to respect that privacy because that's just not the world we live in and the way they operate, but it's so awful not to see that space given. It's so awful to see this play out in such a public way that, frankly, if Lamar wasn't married to Khloe, it wouldn't be the same. It would be a story.
It'd be an NBA story. Right. It would be a story that we'd be interested in locally. Because he's played with the Lakers and he's played with the Clippers and
he's
so well liked, but it wouldn't be the same thing. And it's sad to see. And ultimately you hope that people can have compassion and understand that, it's not first of all, I mean, I've heard people on the radio probably trolling say, they're people who have less means available to them and they deal with more with less and they manage to get through. Well, you know what? If you're one of those people, great. Congratulations to you. It's not a contest. We all wish there were certain things about us that we responded better to, that we were harder workers, that we were more entrepreneurial, all these other things. Because you read stories about people who, when they're out of work, they manage to go back to school and do 6 jobs and all these things and still support their family. And they come out of it with a business and you wish, gosh, I wish I could do that myself. And you know what? You can't, but it's not a contest. People do the best they can, and you just want somebody to be okay at this point, yeah. And that's all that really matters with him.
I've been thinking about this a lot with Lamar, and the knock on him, early in his career, even for a while when he was with the Lakers, is Lamar doesn't care. He doesn't care about when he's on the court. He's indifferent to how well he plays. A lot of that being code for he doesn't look to score enough. But either there was always that label of indifference with Lamar, and obviously with the situation he's in now, you worry about that carrying over into his personal life, where he doesn't care enough about stopping.
He doesn't care enough about himself.
Right, exactly.
It's not caring about other people. That he doesn't have was all the stuff that he was doing before, the selflessness. We all want him to be more selfish, like you're saying, go score more, go do this, go do that, go be the full
be Kobe's Pippen, Lamar. Right.
Be the full manifestation of your talent. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. Does he have that ability to be selfish and take care of himself in a situation like this?
The truth is, and I'm saying this about Lamar or people I know who have struggled with addiction or have gone into rehab or even honestly looking at myself occasionally during periods where, and I'm not comparing myself to Lamar because I've never gotten into this kind of way, but there have been periods in my life where I was drinking too much. and drinking for the wrong reasons, where I was really unhappy and drinking, frankly, a boatload over it. And there came a point where, you know, I didn't stop drinking. I still am a drinker. But I realized this has to stop. This isn't healthy. Or, you know, Brian, I used to be a pretty heavy smoker. And there was a point where I just said, you know, I tried to quit many, many, many times. And then I remember there was one day I woke up from a party that I probably smoked like a carton or something. And I just said, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. Or, you know, anybody who's ever been
right. in the line between being able to stop, whether it's drinking or, you know, people, you know, most people have experimented with some form of drugs and most people don't get addicted. Some people do. The line is, I think, often thinner than yeah. people give it credit.
I mean,
for.
It's you just have to hope that he wants to stop for himself for the right reasons. Like you said, that he cares enough about himself in a weird version of selfish to get through this. Because the truth is he has a lot to live for, you know, forget his career at this point, forget basketball. You know, people say, should the Lakers take him in? Would Miami be a good place?
Who cares?
It doesn't matter at this point. I mean, his basketball career.
The answer is no, but right, the real answer is right. Who cares?
He was at the tail end of his career anyway, but he has so much to live for, you know, whether you're talking about his wife or his children or people around him that we've seen this groundswell of people who really care about him. You just hope that he cares enough to, you know, to capitalize on that and get himself through this situation.
All right. So obviously like a lot of Lakers fans, our prayers and our best wishes go out to him, whatever the exact details might be. Turning now to things that are happening sort of currently with the team. A strange amount, in my opinion.
There's been a lot of talk. I don't know, maybe too much talk.
Of support for the idea.
To quote Bono in the early
80s. Exactly. Of bringing in the recently released Michael Beasley to join the Lakers because, well, I mean, why not? That's generally speaking.
No. There's not been a lot of why not. There's actually been a lot of we need him.
Right. There's been a lot of why not. Like, hey, why not? You know, I mean, because the next guys we're talking about after we get through with Michael Beasley, some of the other additions that we've made to the roster, we being the Lakers, truly qualify as why not. But
no, those are the guys we're going to get into, like Xavier Henry,
right,
Sean Williams. They're the scene in Animal House. Remember when they're looking at the slides of the pledges?
Right.
Why not?
We need the dudes.
Exactly. That's when they're letting in.
Somebody's going to be the 13th guy.
That's when they're letting in Pinto. Beasley is
Beasley
Dorfman. They look at the screen.
Start throwing cans at it. We both are not pro Beasley. But I'm not actually sure, Andy, that we have the same reasons. What are your reasons for being anti, hey, why not sign Michael Beasley if he'd take the veterans minimum to join the Lakers?
Well, there are a few reasons. First of all, I don't think that this team is good enough that if you bring in Michael Beasley, he becomes some type of tangible difference maker. I mean, like where they are now to what they get with Michael Beasley, they're not going to win a title with or without him.
He would fit in kind of as much as I like what they've done, kind of given the constraints Mitch and all these guys have done over the summer, there is an island of misfit toys element to this roster that he would fit in beautifully with.
He will be seamless defensively.
Yeah. He actually fits great in there.
But,
in that sense, he's a fit. But, it's like, you know, they got a lot of dudes like him. But they're sort of collecting them. One more and they get a free latte.
The biggest reason, though, I can think of that I wouldn't want to bring in Beasley is because, like I said, I don't think he makes them so much better that you think, all right, we should roll the dice on this, that he's worth the potential headache and distraction that comes with it at a point where this franchise is really looking to at least create the appearance of stability. And there are reasons to believe that he is going to be a potential headache because he's been a potential headache oft throughout his career, he's given very little indication.
I'm not one of these people who's like just kills guys. Thinks that marijuana is the worst thing in the world.
Look, I want to make this clear because there's this guy at Lakers Wonka that I was debating. He has, by the way, great avatar of Willy Wonka, and he was really going at me about this. We were going back and forth on Twitter because he thinks they should add Beasley, and he kept presenting this like this was me getting moralistic about marijuana. And he also compared me to Skip Bayless, to which I told him, don't ever do that again. But I don't give a crap if you smoke marijuana as an NBA player. Assuming you can handle it, I don't. If you can manage to juggle,
keep yourself out of trouble, if you don't can manage, fail tests, right, and all that
kind
of stuff.
Don't get caught driving with marijuana. Don't get all caught driving with marijuana all the time after you've been in rehab already for marijuana. You know, don't do this while, at least to the best of my knowledge, you're still under investigation for sexual assault, while you're still, you've been told by your organization that you're on thin ice. My thing with Beasley and weed isn't that he's smoking it. He ain't the only guy in the NBA. My thing is, if you can't handle it, Beasley, so he shouldn't do it. And it speaks to the fact that Beasley's professionalism throughout his career has lacked to the point where it's debatable that he actually gives a shit about his career. I don't think he actually cares. Because I've seen a lot of people saying, like, well, you know, he's going to be desperate to prove he can play in the NBA and belongs. I'm like, based on what?
Well, here's the, right.
That he's willing to smoke himself out of
and
it?
And then, I mean, beyond the fact that he's a, you know, he's a very talented scorer. He can score. He doesn't do anything else really particularly well. You know, he's not an awful rebounder, but he's not necessarily a distinguished one. And he's a decent but incredibly inefficient shooter, because his decision-making on the floor is just atrocious. And
it's like he's high.
Yeah.
Could explain a lot, actually.
My biggest thing, and you
they don't test you before you walk right on the court.
You were just kind of touching on this or leading into it, so it's a perfect time. My problem isn't so much, you know what, this year, people are the people on the, hey, why not, train, to some degree have a point, because it doesn't really matter if Beasley is good or bad, because, you know, like you said, is it the difference between an 8 seed and a 7 seed and a 6 seed? Maybe at the very most, and in the end it doesn't matter because they're going to lose in the first round anyway, assuming they get to the playoffs. My biggest problem with it is, what happens if Beasley actually plays pretty well? Then what do you do? It's almost like the Andrew Bynum knee problem, because if he plays well, do you sign him? Because remember, next summer, it's not just about, oh yeah, we got an asset that we can get moving forward. If Michael Beasley plays well, are you going to sign him to a 2-year contract, a 3-year contract, and eat up cap space, not for next summer, because he's just a cap hold and you can figure all that out, but the summer of 2015, you want $3 million of Michael Beasley, perhaps preventing you from signing somebody else that you might
They'd
want.
They'd be lucky, by the way, if it was just $3 million. His last contract was, I think, $6 million per season.
If he plays, I mean, it's going to be in the new world order, it's going to be tough for him to do that. But my point is, why? Because all you're doing is you're setting yourself up.
He got that contract in the new world order. Yes. Yes, he did.
Did he?
Yeah, he signed it coming into this season with Phoenix. He had 1 year in Phoenix washed
that's
out.
That's not going to happen again. That's not going to happen again.
By the way, how many times have we ever said that's not going to happen again about player X, and then it happened again?
There's an element here of the dog chasing the car. What do you do when you catch it? And to some degree, we didn't like if Andrew Bynum came back and you have him that last year and he plays pretty well. Now you have to sign him to a long-term contract and that you know is going to fail down the road. And so that, to me, is one of the biggest reasons not to bring in Beasley, because ultimately – you don't want to be in a position to even have to commit to him.
Right.
And so I just don't see the point.
Look, I want to make it clear, too.
Again, for a team, if he goes to Miami, that makes a little more sense because I think
a team like, right, he needs to go somewhere that is good enough that it's very clear they don't need him. And you know what? You could maybe push us over the top.
Or bad enough that they don't need
right.
him.
Right. You could maybe push us over the top for a title. You know, you're talking like Miami, Chicago, Indiana, the Spurs, maybe Memphis, teams like that with a lot of veterans that, you know, like Isaiah Ryder in 2001 with the Lakers, where it's like, look, we'd love to have you here. We think you can help. We can win a title with or without you. You screw up, you're cut. That's the perfect environment. The Lakers aren't that.
No.
I wish him well. You know, I would hate to see Michael Beasley.
I don't root against anybody,
but I'm saying, like, in talking so much about not wanting to sign him, I have nothing against him personally. I hope he gets all this together. But I would let him mature on someone else's time and dime. That's me.
Yeah. The other thing is just it hasn't been that good. I mean, that's the other thing people forget. It's not like DeMarcus. We're not talking about DeMarcus Cousins, where there's all this demonstrated upside that he's actually, you know, shown, you know, being a double-double guy and all that kind of 20 and 10. I mean, Beasley's
DeMarcus
not been that
good.
DeMarcus
at this point is worth the headache.
Right.
He is right now worth the headache and trying to work through it.
So from the guy that they haven't signed and I can't imagine will, back into the category of throwing shit at the wall to see what sticks, Xavier Henry, welcome, and Sean, otherwise known as Shawnee Williams. Xavier Henry, only 22 years old, pretty good athlete, seems to profile as a decent defender.
Left-handed!
One of the worst shooters the NBA has seen in the last 3 or 4 years, Sean Williams.
Why didn't they sign him last year?
I don't know. Fit right in. Sean Williams has his own issues with the Mary Jane, as they call it.
And the syrup.
Yeah, and all kinds of on and off
court
problems.
He likes to sell syrup.
He, like Michael Beasley, has been... That, to me, just seems silly. I mean... I don't know how much we all like a little extra income, a little income stream. Somebody, you need somebody at that point in your ear going, "Let me help you buy a Wendy's franchise or something." I mean, Sean,
I've got
come
these widgets.
Come over here. Let me.
You'd like to buy them?
I respect your entrepreneurial spirit and saying, you know, you want to have a business going on when your NBA career is over. But this is going to make that happen
you
faster.
You have heard who's coming back, Sean? Drinking birds.
He did have his best season with Mike D'Antoni in 2010-2011, 7.1 points per game.
With the Knicks.
Yes, with the Knicks. 4.1 rebounds, 20 minutes a game, all career high, 40.1% from three-point range, including, Andy, almost 40%, 47% from the right corner, about 42% from the left. Again, all career highs. So he's at least demonstrated some aptitude playing with Mike D'Antoni. All right, a couple other little headlines. Pau Gasol, as you know, Andy, was involved in the Madrid 2020 bid. He went to the IOC and he helped pitch the city. It did not work. The Olympics are going to Tokyo.
Like my woman.
And Mothra. I guess they needed the black swan pitch and they only got the white swan.
Yeah, it was weird. Right after the announcement of Tokyo getting the Olympics, Kobe just tweeted out big boy pants. I had no idea what he was talking about, but I guess he was telling Pau that pitch needed big boy pants.
Yep. So it's a tough go for Pau. Good for him for trying. I mean, it's not like he hasn't been busy this summer.
He's so selfless. I mean, he spent the season working with these Syrian refugees. You know, every year he does something for UNICEF because Pau Gasol is like the greatest human being on the planet. And then he goes out and lobbies for Madrid. It's not even his home city. And he's not, you know, it's his home country, but, you know, he's from Barcelona. Somebody else from Madrid can handle this. But Pau is so nice. You know, I'm sure he didn't talk shit about Tokyo, didn't talk shit about Istanbul. You know, but Kobe would have played dirty pool. Kobe would have absolutely played dirty pool during those pitches.
Oh, there's no question. Kobe would have been talking about radiation. He'd been talking about civil unrest. He'd have been doing all kinds of stuff.
But, you know, Pau probably is so nice.
Yeah, you know, Jacques Rogge, that Godzilla shit is real. That thing will come and get your ass.
My guess is Pau was so complimentary of Tokyo during his pitch for Madrid that he ended up getting Tokyo as the decision.
It's a very nice city.
God bless the guy.
Good for trying. You mentioned Kobe Bryant. Most people by now have seen the vine of him leaping off a high dive. I have come up with a theory that I think what Kobe is doing, beyond just sort of convincing himself, is like we intellectually know that even if he comes back at the beginning of the year and all these, it's going to take a little bit of time for him to be Kobe again. I think what he's been doing and what he will continue to do is put this stuff out there so that it almost like a magician does with sleight of hand. So while we're all kind of amazed at what's going on, like he can kind of get his footwork in shape and kind of get back, and everybody will just assume that he's still Kobe because he's jumping off high dives and wrestling cattle and all kinds of other things that I assume are coming, pulling trucks with his teeth like Magnus Vermagnussen.
I saw a vine and I was really shocked by this. I did not expect to see this coming this early in Kobe's rehab, where he kicked through four boards. he kicked four 2x4s stacked up. He kicked through all four of them. I mean, honestly, that's not something you expect to
see
as part. And then, like, he brought up the panels of ice.
There is no pain in this dojo.
Yeah, it was amazing. When he told his trainer to sweep his leg, I'm like, Kobe, geez, calm down, man. Still did it.
Yeah, and
when he had a semi run over his Achilles.
Do it. Do it.
The guy's amazing.
Right? So yeah, congratulations to Kobe for healing. So honestly, I really do think there's a possibility that he is reconstructing the Kobe myth so that we all forget that 35-year-olds with 20, basically 20 years worth of mileage are not supposed to be able to do this. So he's reconstructing the myth. It's brilliant.
It really
is. It's absolutely brilliant. And he is so much better at social media than everyone.
It's as if Kobe had the foresight to actually realize, because, you know, he joined social media first, Twitter and then Instagram. Cover. Right. But when he joined, everyone was like, whoa. I mean, not just because he's Kobe Bryant, but because, as he said, the antisocial has become social. He always seemed like the last person who'd be interested. It seemed like something that he would think is a waste of time. It's as if Kobe had the foresight to realize that he was going to blow out his Achilles in the third to last game of the year. So he started building up his social media presence in order to eventually build up the myth of his rehab.
He is so much smarter than the rest of us.
You have to wonder, though, why he didn't actually see the sweep coming in the playoffs and realize it is not worth busting my ass to try to get us into the playoffs.
It's highly competitive. All right, Andy, we've reached that point in the show for our favorite segment, everyone's favorite segment, the segment that is sweeping the nation, and I believe it was spoken of on the Today Show just last week.
I couldn't believe when Meet the Press, the panel spent the entire 30 minutes talking about
it's like,
ACK.
Folks, there's a lot going on with Syria. Eyes on the prize, but it is time indeed for ACK. Let's start things off with @brain74, our friend Chris Brainerd. We don't know him, but I'm sure we'd be friends if we did. @CamBrothers. Same question you had for @Flea333 in our podcast with Flea. That's Flea. Flea333. It's just Flea.
And by the way, if you have not listened to that podcast, get on it because it's really, really good.
Mostly because of Flea.
And us.
And us. But you know, having Flea helped.
Yeah. Which, well, certainly if you're going to interview Flea, having Flea helps, yes.
Which four Lakers would AKBK each select for a pickup game? We asked this question of Flea. Andy, I am asking it of you.
Well, I would want my pickup team, first and foremost, I am emphasizing I want to have fun.
Right.
I want a group that wants to have fun over a group that wants to win because, as you know, I'm not very good
at basketball.
No,
the team with you is going to lose.
Right. And I want to have a group that is going to be accepting of that loss. Like, you know, I cannot play on a group with Kobe because Kobe is going to get very, very irritated with me. And I also want a group that's going to be, you know, moving the ball around, having fun. Like, you know, God bless him, Andrew Bynum, I don't necessarily want on my team. So this is my group. I'm going to be playing shooting guard just because it'll become easiest, I think, to just put me in the corner.
You got to play somewhere.
Right. Put me in a corner, stand there. I'm going to be spotted.
Because remember,
up.
The rules are we're playing on this five.
Right, unfortunately. I'm running Magic at the point.
That's a good pick.
Me at the two.
Yep.
Lamar Odom at small forward.
All right. That's
Pau
fun.
Pau Gasol at power forward.
Right.
Vlade at center.
Okay.
And I thought about Kareem just because the idea of being on a court with Kareem. But he's too intense. He's not going to be able to handle my just have fun rule.
That's true. And I had Kareem.
Plus, after the game, I can have a cigarette with Vlade.
I had Kareem, and I for
or
basically that reason,
the
just the option of playing with Kareem. Magic is awesome. I went back and forth as to who I wanted at my 3-4 areas.
So you're playing the two as well?
Yes, because again, nobody wants me as the point. I can tell you that much. And I thought about Pau. And, you know, trying to figure out, and then and now I got to figure out my three. So I went with Worthy because I think he'd be fun. And then Slava Medvedenko. So I'm going to have a 4-5 combination of Kareem and Slava.
I can't believe I didn't go Slava.
Yeah, so I'm going to go Slava. I thought about Von Wafer, but then I just decided that would be overkill. All right, next question from @TheGreatCorrupter.
No, just Great Corrupter. The Great Corrupter has not sent us jack.
@CamBrothers, and this is appropriate to ask you, best hangover cure?
For me, I've always enjoyed a combination of Tylenol,
mm-hmm.
Gatorade, a little bit of coffee just to wake yourself up, not a whole lot because too much can actually make you nauseous, and then cold pizza. I don't want to reheat it. I want it cold. Thin crust. Too much crust is going to start weighing down a little bit too much. You want to get something to absorb that leftover liquor, but not so much that you're starting to feel sick.
One of my best friends swears by Sprite, so I'll just throw that out there. But
I know who
I've
always
been a big advocate of food. I think you get up and you go, you know, if you're in LA and you know and you live in the area, you know what I'm talking about when I say, like, you go to the Griddle Cafe. You go.
No,
you just have
that's a terrible.
No, see, I disagree.
No,
with you.
No.
I know. Dave, you had your turn. And what I feel like, you know, and I know you're talking about the weighing down thing and all that kind of stuff.
No. That's not why. Give your reason. I'll tell you why you're wrong.
I've always felt like you go in there, you feel that you go, you have a lot of water with your food, drink a lot of water, eat something with flavor, eat something delicious. You don't have to finish the whole thing, but you go somewhere and you get a nice, good, like, breakfasty breakfast. You get out because it gets you out of bed, it gets you moving, it gets you from point A to point B. And I have always found in my experience that combination of factors, along with a Sprite, does the trick. You always take the drugs and do all that stuff.
You are right in terms, Brian, of that combination of elements. Every single one of those things that you brought up, I agree with. However, there is a reason Griddle Cafe on Sunset is a poor choice when you are hungover. You do not want somewhere where you're going to have to...
You have to go early.
You do not
so you
want somewhere
wait.
You're going to have to wait like an hour plus
I
to
was thinking,
sit down.
Purely thinking of food, but logistically speaking, you're right. If you're going to go... You have to go early, which is hard to do with
a hangover. Go somewhere like Canners. Go somewhere where you will always be
Canners
sat
on a weekend,
right.
You might have to wait, too. But just the point is, the food is what I'm getting.
Yeah. And then finally from Ale Vizantos, which NFL team that finished last in their division last year has the best chance to make the playoffs this year? Appropriate question for the opening weekend of the NFL
right,
season.
There's always that's the thing. It's like the there's always a 4 seed that beats a 12
worst
in the NCAA
to
tournament. There's always that worst to first or worst to the playoffs. Your choices in the NFC are Philadelphia, Detroit, Tampa Bay, and Arizona. Of those teams, I think Detroit is easily the most likely of those teams.
I agree 100%.
To leap up to a playoff spot. It's going to be tough in the NFC. Tampa, I don't think is good enough. Arizona, not with San Francisco and Seattle around.
Although I think they're going to be better this year.
I mean, I agree with you. Philadelphia, you don't quite know what you're going to get yet, and that division's not great. So I would say they're my second choice in there. But again, you know, you were talking about a really good NFC. In the AFC, you have Buffalo, Cleveland, Jacksonville, and Kansas City. I think we all saw on Sunday that it's not going to be Jacksonville. Buffalo doesn't seem likely. Cleveland is an interesting choice, and only because, you know, Baltimore, if you buy what happened on Thursday, got destroyed. I think they're better than that, obviously. And Pittsburgh's terrible. Pittsburgh's not going to be a good team this year. And so maybe if something weird happens to the Bengals, like guys get hurt, they could jump up. Kansas City.
Not with Denver in that
division. We're not talking about winning. The question wasn't winning
That's
the division.
True.
The question was making the playoffs. And so given the weakness in the AFC, better quarterback, healthy Jamal Charles, pretty good defense.
New coach
in the AFC. I think Kansas City is probably your best bet to make the playoffs.
Right.
Buffalo is not
even in this conversation.
Right. And Cleveland might be a little sneaky because I don't think the division is
so
great.
So it probably is Kansas City, but the reality is in the AFC, it is none of the above.
Doesn't say Kansas City is probably the best option. All right. Before we go, a story that should be really good. Andy, you mentioned this at the beginning that puts things in perspective to always be thankful for what you have. Portland Trailblazers and Taco Bell will no longer run their popular free Chalupa promotion at games during the 2014 season, according to team sources.
This is a report from Blazers Edge, the excellent Trailblazers blog.
The newly renamed Moda Center, it's no longer the Rose Garden. And so they promise they're going to replace him with something else if the Blazers score 100 points and the fans will be rewarded. But either way, it is, at least for the time being, Blazers fans have nothing coming to them if their team scores 100 points. What would happen, Andy, in LA if the Jack in the Box taco promotion was taken away from people?
Mike D'Antoni would be fired. They would have to. The Lakers would have to fire Mike D'Antoni, coming with the season that they came off last year. All the, you know, instability moving forward, everybody unsure about the direction things are going in. You know, we don't know what Kobe's going to look like. We don't know what Powell's going to look like. This coming season, really the only thing people had to look forward to as sort of, you know, the thing they can count on is that tacos.
You just can't take it away from people. The one thing we know they're going to do this year is score 100 points. Now, they may not satisfy the score 100 points and win thing, which is, I think, part of it, right? They have to score 100 points and win.
Although it might change this year.
Right. Because they're going to score 100 points. They'll do that. But you just can't take that away from people.
You know what?
You can't take that away from people.
Even if you replaced it, like gave them something else, tacos are part of the tradition. It's part of the chant. Like if you replace it with a different food item, I still think people are going to get upset.
As long as they, if you replace it with a different food item that has
two syllables. Like, we want burgers.
Clap, 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 clap. That's fine. We want French fries, whatever it is. But it's got to be two syllables.
We want Chinese chicken salad.
too long. You know, even delicious things, they have to have two syllables.
I cannot believe this of all season two, where there's been so little hope. You got to keep the tacos.
Our thoughts and prayers go out to Blazers fans in Portland, and hope they have a swift resolution to this tragedy. Anyway, we will be back when there's news.
See you in October.
Not going to promise anything. Like, I sit here and tell you we're going to be back on Thursday or Friday, but we'll be back at some point. Something's going to happen. And then when it does, we'll talk about it. All right. See everybody next time.